Money and markets. I discussed in our second quarter wrap-up last week, July 4th, that one of the big opportunities is a tremendous pull-in of capital to North America. This is a very important switch. I predict this will be as big as the financial coup d'etat was in terms of shifting capital out. A lot of my evolution of thinking came with a very long discussion with Dr. Joseph Farrell that I had on my way as I was leaving California, and a wonderful opportunity to talk with him and Scott DeHart, one of his co-authors, in person. And he wrote a blog post about part of that discussion and at his website, Giza Death Star, and then I've posted it up at Solari.com. And I encourage you to take a look at it because, again, I think this is going to be a very important shift of capital. It's going to be very big. It's going to impact all of our balance sheets and income statements in a variety of ways. So it's worth taking time to learn about it. One of the biggest downs lately, unfortunately, is the U.S. President, Barack Obama, signing an executive order on July 6th that kind of snuck past us, but it's up on the blog today, giving him the power to shut the entire U.S. communication system or any part of it down and bring it back up. It also gives him the power to direct power over communications to any agency or group of agency he chooses. It's up on the blog. I think it's part of the ongoing NSA saga that we've been watching. If you're going to move this much capital into a place, you're going to get turf wars breaking out, and you're going to make sure you have control. Nicholas Negroponte, when he was head of the MIT Media Lab, said that in a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. Indeed, money is in fact digital, increasingly. It's simply bits on a screen. That means power and money shifts to ownership and control of the train tracks that record and transfer those digital bits. So that's what everybody's fighting about. Who controls the databases, the transfer, the settlement systems, and truly the, you know, the greatest insider trading machinery, intelligence machinery ever created. If you just look back a little bit, April 15th, we had Boston, a shutdown of the Boston universities. And at that very same time, CISPA passes through the House. CISPA is the internet control bill. Then suddenly Snowden suddenly leaks everything out on the NSA. And sure enough, CISPA is announced dead in its tracks. Well, a new FBI director who's tough on NSA is appointed. Now we have the president signing an executive order that gives him the power to shift power over the communication systems to different places, including the White House and Department of Homeland Security. So you kind of wonder what all this is about. But let's step back and get perspective on the whole thing. If you run the black budget, you need a radical reengineering of your finances. You go back and you start in 1990. It's not hard to tell that you're going to have a big budget problem with the baby boomers retiring. And besides, financing the black budget is horribly unprofessional. You're depending on clawing money out of other agencies' federal budgets and engaging in all sorts of illegal activities. It's making it very time-consuming and expensive to manage. And you can see the bumping into the baby boomers' retirement is coming. And so what does it make sense? It makes sense to have a financial coup d'etat. I've said I thought they stole at least, after all the bailouts, at least $40 trillion. You create an endowment. 5% on $40 trillion gives you $2 trillion a year. That's enough to fund $1.5 trillion plus a year of expenses on the black budget. I said last week, Michael Sala put a video up on the blog, estimates now that the black budget is running at an annual $1.7 trillion a year. I think what we're watching, given what we're watching going on across certainly North America, that number makes sense to me. But what do you need? You need you've got your $40 trillion, you've got your sort of annuity cash flow every year. You've given yourself marvelous insulation against the changes that could be coming to the federal budget. But you need a high-precision distributed manufacturing base in a territory that you control. That's North America. That requires that you bring down the cost of energy, and it requires a serious shift of new technologies out of the lab. And that's what we're watching: fabrication technology, 3D printing, new materials, nanotechnology. Here it comes. Wonderful example this week, Simon Black of Sovereign Man did a calculation of how much it was cost us to doing wiretaps, and he calculated that it got each wiretap that the NSA was doing was $50,000 per wiretap. Now, you know, I could question that number, but the reality is, another great article up on the blog about why are we spending this much money when we're letting the infrastructure go. Well, because before you can build a new economy in America, you want to have the kind of control that's being instituted. And so, yeah, the surveillance and the wiretaps are very uneconomic, but that's not what they're about. It's about building an infrastructure that will allow you to lock down your base and make an extraordinary investment. $1.7 trillion a year or $2 trillion a year is an extraordinary investment, and you want to have lockdown. As I've always said, there's plenty of money. The trick is to spend it in a way that builds you what you want and doesn't kick up inflation. And I had a very smart person in my network say today, we're not going to get hyperinflation because people have no money. And of course, pulling the rug out from under the emerging markets is going to take more money out of the hands of a lot more people who would spend it on consumption. So again, a very sort of pull the balloon out of the inflation. And as I've always said, the key to the slow burn is that you offset monetary inflation with labor deflation. And again, we're seeing more of that. It's just getting uglier and meaner. Again, my two cents is the black budget infrastructures bought themselves remarkable insulation from the coming budget struggles, and they are proceeding with confidence. After I did the wrap-up, I drove into Dallas and around Dallas and up north, 50 miles coming into Dallas from the west and 20 miles driving north. Every couple of miles, there's a new big corporate headquarters going up. The road construction, the housing development is extraordinary. Dallas, of course, being one of the big centers for the black budget. So from everything I can see, it's boom time in black budget North America. This, of course, leaves the United States government to figure out how they're going to deal with the baby boomer issues. The deficit picture is improving in the short term. We see an article from Bloomberg today. The U.S. government posted the widest monthly budget surplus in more than 5 years for June. Spending plunged 47%, a stronger economy lifted tax receipts, on and on and on. The administration now projects a federal budget deficit that will shrink to $759 billion this year. My guess is it's even going to be smaller. But that's short term. We're watching exploding Medicare and Social Security still bearing down. That's going to create serious problems by 2015, if not pain before then. And so don't be surprised if we see all sorts of tax deductions and revenue issues on the table to be debated out, if not this year, next year. More about that later. The great two cover stories in all of this is, you know, for many years, the big cover story that protected the black budget was incompetence. So governments are incompetent, and the people who work at the Pentagon are incompetent, and the systems, the computer systems are incompetent, and they can't get the computers to talk to each other, and it's all just a lot of really horrible incompetence. And that, for many years, was a cover story when $4 trillion went missing from the federal government between fiscal 1998 and 2002. They're, you know, on and on and on about how all this was government was trying. It was just all lots of incompetence. Well, that, of course, is ridiculous. It's a complete cover story. If you look at all the defense contractors running all the investment, all the financial systems and IT systems that produce all the audited information and all the financial information and make all the payments, they're very competent. They all can produce annual financial statements audited every year for their own operations. They have no problem. So incompetence was a cover story. We're watching and have been watching for many, many years another cover story, which is corruption. The idea being that all this is happening because you have a few Goldman Sachs partners who want Ferraris and offshore accounts, and they're just greedy people and out of control. Well, of course, that's ridiculous, because if you look at the amount of money that's been disappearing, as I said, my estimate is $40 trillion into the endowments alone of the black budget. We're talking about money on a scale. And for example, for the mortgage fraud, fraud on a scale that requires deep and serious systemic support at the Treasury, at the central bank, at the Department of Justice, across many of the banks. So we're talking about a much deeper system. We're even talking about a parallel system. I keep mentioning Glenn Greenwald's very clever notion of a one-way mirror. We're talking about a completely different economy and parallel financial system behind the one-way mirror, what some people call the shadow banking system. It's much bigger than that. Of course, it's the black budget. And so as a society, we're choking on the expense of the secrecy, you know, because the distrust from the corruption cover story is enormous. And of course, we're all walking around on planet Earth knowing that what we're looking at is not the sky, it's a ceiling, and there's another sky above it, but we can't see it clearly. The way to deal with it, one way to deal with it is, in fact, if you look at the black budget and how it's financing, it's harvesting the economy one local area at a time. And we have the power to bring transparency to this and actually shift it enormously. If every one of us just stopped, and I'll just talk to North America, if every one of us just stopped buying illegal drugs, cut way down on pharmaceuticals, stopped buying lottery tickets, started growing our own food or buying food from people locally who did, and reinvested the money in a local venture fund, I assure you we have all the money we need to rebuild the economy right from those shifts. There's lots of meetings going on in the next 2 weeks, and you want to keep an eye on them, particularly if we can get any decent leaks out of them. This Saturday, the Bohemian Grove comes together outside of north of San Francisco. They will make important decisions and give indicators by August and September, big decisions that will impact the key budget issues, including how we're going to resolve the debt ceiling. And if I'm right that there's a huge capital move in, pull in to North America, a lot more decisions to be made at that time. And of course, the big trick in the capital markets is how are we going to engineer a bull market in equities? And I think, and certainly how are we're going to stop the Fed from buying all the treasuries that the Treasury has issued, and how we're going to resolve the federal financing the federal deficit and bring the deficit down. All of those issues, I think, will be on the table at the Grove. They're going to have to sort out some of the traffic jam issues coming this fall. We have a deeply partisan gridlock Congress with a lot of legislation piled on top, including the immigration reform. So I think there are going to be some issues to sort out. And then coming up is the Trans-Pacific Partnership meeting. This is also going to be key to big infrastructure investments and the pull-in of capital to North America. That money wants private control outside of municipal rules. It's one of the reasons I believe there's been such a push on gun ownership, failed at the federal level, but the trench warfare at the states is going to continue. I said last week markets overreacted to Bernanke's last speech, coining the term, one market commentator coining the term taper tantrums, referring to the Fed tapering their purchases of mortgage-backed securities and other paper off of the bank balance sheet. Ben made comments yesterday indicating that the Fed had no intention of stopping if they were needed to continue to buy. And today we had reverse taper tantrums with interest rates stabilizing a little bit, as I've been expecting them to do. If they don't stabilize, the government's going to have a big, big problem, not just with the deficit, but financing the government deficit. John Williams at Shadowstat said the Fed is now buying the equivalent of 90% of the U.S. Treasury demand. Now, as I've said before, I think the Fed's taking the fraudulent paper off, leaving the banks essentially holding Treasury. So when the bail-ins come, they're going to be strong. What happens, again, when they stop? Very big question. Right now, politically, you have three people vying for money in the federal pot. One is the military, one is creditors, the other is retirees. The reality is the military keeps the dollar strong, the creditors keep the dollar financing, retirees, well, I'm not sure they have the political clout of the other two, so this is going to be an interesting discussion. Talking about power shifts related to interest rates, That whole game took an interesting turn today. Reuters announces that they have it on inside information. It's not an official announcement that the management of LIBOR is going to transfer from the British Bankers Association to the New York Stock Exchange Euronext. That's a shift out of a Brit-controlled entity, which has had it forever, into something which is much more North America. It's a combined leadership, North America and Europe, but much more North America-centric. And my question is a part of that pull-in of the capital back. But certainly, if you look at what the Fed's trying to do to keep interest rates low and what the U.S. government needs to keep interest rates low, doesn't surprise me to see that control, which is so important, not just to the debt markets, but derivatives as well. One of the people who got a real spike, essentially 100% in interest rates or student loans, legislative efforts at the federal level to keep student loans down in the 3% area haven't worked. And so we see an enormous jump in interest rates on new student loans. And it's quite a shocking political issue, because it's very clear to students that banks can borrow at the Fed window at 0.5% to 0.75%, even 0%. So basically, the interest rate to big banks is nothing. The interest rate to the young people who are the future of our country is over 6% now. It's pretty shocking. Oregon, in response to all of this, came up with a proposal that would allow students to borrow in exchange for a percentage of their earnings. It's essentially flipping the model to something much more equity-based, with the lender sharing the risk and having a vested interest in the student succeeding. We've seen that on certain graduate programs, I've seen it offered to dental at the federal level, but it wouldn't surprise me to see that model change. One subscriber asked me what I thought of it, and I said, frankly, I think a society owes its young people an education essentially for free. It's an investment in the future. So, you know, all of these things are, this Oregon is certainly an improvement, but I don't think it's anywhere near enough. Dodd-Frank regulations continue to be worked on. We see an announcement this week up on the blog. Bigger capital requirements for the banks, that's part Dodd-Frank, part coming from Basel III. We had testimony this week from the federal regulators, Fed, FDIC, and OCC, about what could be expected on the Dodd-Frank. What they said was, by the end of the year, regulators should, quote, complete implementation of a risk-based capital surcharge for systemically important banks, a liquidity rule, and the Volcker rule to ban proprietary trading by the banks. All of this is very tough stuff. It's going to take a lot of inflationary forces out of the financial system. The reality is, with the financial coup d'etat over, there's enormous excess capacity in the banking and financial system. It has to be cut back, and it's a real political taffy pull as to how to do that. But I expect this stuff to come and continue to try and, you know, sort of cut capacity, horn in the reins. Bottom line, I've said it for several weeks now, I'm going to keep saying it again, get ready for bail-ins, get ready for bail-ins. And it's important that you and your finances are individually ready for bail-ins. I don't expect it to, in the United States, to threaten insured deposits, but it certainly could threaten uninsured deposits, and we could certainly get some liquidity scares. So just be prepared. A very tough place to work right now is the IRS. Of course, we saw turnover at the top of the IRS when G7 announced they were targeting the tax havens. But there's plenty of challenges at the IRS from domestic policies as well. We see they have a big piece of Obamacare, and we see the announcement this week of delay of large company compliance with Obamacare. Word on the street is a lot of companies are not taking much of a breather because of that. In fact, a lot of them who can are shifting from full-time employment with medical benefits to part-time, just to beat the cost of Obamacare. The reality is Obamacare is completely unworkable. you know, I always said, and this is what I believe, it was a framework for being able to cut Medicare as the expenses exploded, but at the same time protect the corporate profits coming from the flows of money in medicine, particularly from the government. I had someone from Massachusetts long ago, and Massachusetts instituted its equivalent of Obamacare many years ago, that essentially what happened in Massachusetts was people who spent several thousand dollars a year on healthcare suddenly had to stop spending on healthcare, were forced to spend it on insurance, which bought them nothing, and the result was, you know, they lost their healthcare. Yeah, they got insurance, but basically they were significantly worse off. I made that choice in 2006 when I settled the litigation. I sat down and I said, if you look at how much money I want to spend on orchards and gardens, organic food, on doing all sorts of special detox, on getting alternative health equipment, on building my immune system, I can afford to spend an enormous amount of money on that, but I can't afford insurance on top of it. And so I made a decision to spend it on health instead of insurance. It's a very individual decision. And because I drive a lot and there's always a risk of an accident, I got special travel insurance from AAA, which is I'm a member of AAA and can't recommend them enough, whether it's their roadside services or their insurance. And then when I discovered Samaritan Ministries, I joined Samaritan Ministries. That's a co-op, essentially. It's an association of Christians who underwrite and sell, sort of self-insure each other. So every month I send about, I do a lot of the complimentary and voluntary donations, but I send off about $200 a month to various people through Samaritan Ministries. I have no intention of being part of Obamacare. I'll pay the penalties, whatever they are, even if they go ahead and try and admit it, because I refuse to be in the database for a variety of reasons. You know, and if you want to understand that, read my article, The Data Beast. Whenever I fill out a form, who asks me who my doctor is, I write none. And that's because I have no desire to turn over into the database legal authority to anybody to make any decisions with respect to me that I haven't individually approved in a healthcare proxy. I've spent a lot of time, so has the Solari team, looking for suggestions for people to help us help you navigate the healthcare system and Obamacare. If you have suggestions for people you think would be good to do that, I would encourage you to keep sending them to us, because I think that's a area we're gonna need to be talking and sharing information a lot. As I said before, be warned, tax deductions in play, two to consider. Mortgage deductions for one, I think by 2014, 2015 could be in play. State and local deductions as well. So just keep that in the back of your mind as you work on your finances. The IMF predicts this week, or changed their prediction for global economic growth. We're watching a slowdown around the world. One place we're not watching a slowdown is the explosion of new technology. And to remind us of that, we have Musk, the head of Tesla Motors and SpaceX, talking now about a transportation system known as Hyperloop, a tube transport system that will allow passengers to travel at high speeds. The proposed system would allow passengers to travel from San Francisco to Los Angeles in 30 minutes or less. If it seems crazy, check out the article on the blog. It wouldn't surprise me if we had such things operating, but, you know, below and between the underground facilities, which are many. Anyway, finally, big support for the dollar. Speaking of high technology, we see a Northrop Grumman drone now landing on an aircraft carrier by itself. So it can take off and land from an aircraft carrier. Discussion in the article about how long it will be until the drone can decide who it shoots to kill and who it doesn't. Very chilling, but it's coming. And that kind of technology is big support for continuing the dollar as a reserve currency. So check it out.